This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte's growth continues with major plans toward the north. The bridge taking the light rail over Harris Boulevard in University City is well underway, and soon the Lynx Blue Line will connect the university with uptown and then south almost to Pineville. But that's not all. There are major plans for a revitalization of the North Tryon Street corridor, and all of this promises to completely transform that part of Charlotte. It's even been given a new name, North End, hoping, no doubt, that the success of South End rubs off. Here to talk about these ambitious plans are Ed McKinney, Mary Newsom, and Michael Smith. Ed McKinney is Interim Planning Director in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Planning Department. Welcome back. Mary Newsom is always here. She is Associate Director. She has a little seat over in the corner. She is Associate Director of the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute and the author of PlanCharlotte.org. She's been following planning and development since her days at the Charlotte Observer. I beg your pardon. Did I say something wrong about that? You said I was the author.
Well, multiple authors. Okay. And we are very grateful for them.
We've given you that position, and don't deny it.
Promoted.
That's right.
Or demoted.
And Michael Smith is President and CEO of Charlotte Center City Partners. Welcome back to you as well. So before we talk about these plans, because there are several plans here, but all part of one big plan, why has it taken so long for Charlotte to turn its attention to everything north of Trade Street?
You know, actually, I think we spent a lot of time focused on the north part of Uptown. So beginning there as a foundation. It's a lot of McCall's legacy,
right?
Is the amount of land that was assembled, the amount of office that was put into this area, the revitalization of 4th Ward, the revitalization of 1st Ward. We just ended up with these assemblages in between those great neighborhoods with great cultural institutions, but just not a complete place. So a lot kind of on the come. And that's what we're trying to plan for.
So this is going to be kind of complex for some people who are just being introduced to all this. We're going to talk about what amounts to three different plans, which are all part of one big plan, which all focused attention to the North Tryon Vision Plan, which, and we're sitting in the middle of that right now.
Yes.
It starts at about 6th and what? Tryon Street? 6th and Church?
6th from Brevard over to... over to Poplar.
Okay.
And then up to 277.
Up to 12th. Which is 12th Street. That's the north, that's part of the North Tryon Vision Plan. All right. And that's officially North End, or does North End continue on?
North End is north of that. This is the that's the North Tryon Plan.
Vision Plan. Okay.
So 60 acres.
So then we have the North Tryon Street Corridor Plan, which will extend well beyond that boundary, out beyond the 277 loop, I believe. All the way to 85, right?
Correct.
And then what do you call the part of the plan that takes the blue line from 7th Street to the university and goes through NoDa and the Belmont neighborhood, et cetera? What do you call that?
I think it's just an element of the plan. I think it's infrastructure to create. It's that great blend that Charlotte keeps doing of transportation planning and land use planning.
So are these viewed in your mind or the three of your minds as distinct individual pieces of a big puzzle, or are they just one way to talk about a big vision plan for that whole region?
Yeah, they're really part of and sort of a set of layers to our bigger vision, which is about putting investment in our corridors and our centers. So the North Corridor is part of a bigger system and a vision we have for the whole city that includes all of our transit corridors. And this is an example of how we're implementing that now with light rail, with the plans in Uptown, with the investments we're making in streetscape and new connections and the things like Cross Charlotte Trail to ensure that we are creating places and communities along that corridor that are walkable, that are connected, that are really taking advantage of the range of mobility options that we're putting in place.
And I think, let me just say that, sure. I think there have been a lot of plans over the years that have looked at this part of the city because it's a real important part of the city. And kind of depends on what do you mean by plan. But a lot of people have looked at it over decades. But the reason that suddenly stuff is happening is the rail. That is the power of a light rail line, is that all of a sudden heads start to swivel and projects start coming out of the ground and people say, whoa, whatever planning we did in the past, we need to look at it again.
And there's another piece of this that I haven't mentioned yet. It's called the Applied Innovation Corridor, which would be the area running north of the city between the Lynx Blue Line extension to the university and the Red Line, which is the commuter rail that ultimately, hopefully someday in my lifetime, probably not, go to Huntersville. The Applied Innovation Corridor is a piece of this. How does it differ from, well, how does it fit into everything else we're talking about this morning?
The Applied Innovation Corridor is a concept that's in the 2020 plan, and it knits together the concept that we've got this incredible area that's aggressively zoned and that in its past was small mills with workforce housing around it, and connects our central employment district with our university. And how do we use that land between those two great assets to create the palette for tomorrow's growth, tomorrow's vibrancy, growth of tax base, growth of jobs, 21st century middle-income jobs? It is a rich palette.
The idea of an applied innovation corridor, that's an idea a lot of cities have looked at and planned for. And the elements tend to be underused industrial buildings that might one day be home to innovative companies yet to be named. They typically have a good structure of walkability. They have what planners call good bones, mm-hmm. which means sidewalks and streets that connect.
Change is certainly going to come along the light rail line because we saw it happen in South End. We were told it was going to happen, and what do you know? It did. So it's going to happen as it goes north to the university. We'll talk about what kind of development that might be. But what you're talking about downtown from 6th Street to 12th Street and what you're talking about beyond 12th Street up north Tryon to 85 is something that you're going to really have to work hard at making happen. Would that be accurate?
All of this is hard work. I mean, this is city
building. Well, yeah, yes, but the light rail, when you put that train and it opens in 2017, there are going to be developers chomping at the bit to get immediate access to that on either side of that track. So the rest of this seems more difficult to me.
I think it all fits together. You know, the work that we're doing in the immediate area, the North Tryon Vision Plan, the 9th Street Station will open next year. Well, the land assemblage has been piecing together since the 90s,
okay.
where you've got the Levines with towards 30 acres. Mecklenburg County owns big parcels. Bank of America owns some parcels. The Housing Authority. These are big assemblages and big opportunities.
Who put together this plan? How many players are there?
22.
And they are? Who are they? Government? Charlotte Center City Partners, which is not a government organization, but is kind of like an ex officio chamber of commerce for downtown. go ahead.
Well, it's certainly a strong partnership between the city, the county, Charlotte Center City Partners, the Foundation for the Carolinas, and then a whole myriad of other stakeholders in the geography that said, given the energy and the investment that we've already made, what can we do collectively to rethink and envision what the next 20, 25 years of that investment could look like? And sort of re-envisioning what that place could be. So ensuring that we've got the kind of public infrastructure, the streets, mm-hmm. that we're ensuring that the kind of development that we get creates activation on those streets, that creates the kind of mix of use that we want. All of those things take a little bit of vision casting so that we set an aspiration that we all try to achieve. If we just do that incrementally, it's really an opportunity missed.
A lot of people living here now who may not have been here in the 80s or the 70s, and a lot of people living in South End who weren't alive when South End wasn't South End, don't remember what South End was like. So compare what it was like then to what it is today, to what we are sitting in today, and what it will be like when this plan is realized.
You had winos sleeping in the doorways in the South End. Gaines Brown, the guy who has sold a common market building to Great Angst, was very much an urban pioneer. There was nobody down there. It was old mills that nobody was using. Mm-hmm. And a few remaining industries, but it was very much industrial. It was gritty. Nobody lived there except for some folks a little bit farther down, and it was a lot of low-income housing the farther out you got.
And, of course, today it's all apartments and restaurants and shops and things.
Lots of new employment coming online. It was a gap before. It was a gap between two neighborhoods that had great infrastructure. You know, Dilworth even was a raw neighborhood for a while.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't always what it is today. And
Michael, you should have bought in there in the
80s. You're right. You're right. But now we have an area that brought institutional investors to Charlotte in a way that we had not seen in the past. And it's been a part of a $2 billion renaissance through that district.
And you have said, Michael, that this is going to be what's happening up here on the north side of things. It's going to be very different from what we see on South Tryon. How so?
Well, the North Tryon plan intends to not try to out South Tryon, South Tryon. And we want to have a different form to it. We'd like the block structures to introduce things like paseos and alleyways.
I don't even know what a paseo is, so you'll have to explain it to me.
It is a highly programmed alley. these are narrow. It creates more faces to the block.
Yeah, so, you know, essentially one of the opportunities we have in the on the north side is to reimagine even the block structure that we've got now, which is a good starting point, but the opportunity to use development to create more connections between those blocks and more activation on the street and more walkability.
And again, when you're talking about the north side in this part of the conversation, you're talking about where we're sitting now between
Correct.
6th Street and 12th Street uptown from College to Caldwell or College to Church, somewhere in that neighborhood. So you're talking about this is where the Hal Marshall Center is now. You're talking about
Yes.
taking that out and
Hull House.
Okay, and that would be you've referred to the Hal Marshall Center as a catalyst project. What does that mean? When you take that out and develop that area, why will that be a catalyst?
Well, so at a basic level, simply because of its scale. So it controls a big, significant part of the geography of this part of Uptown, and so that'll set the tone and really be the kind of milestone for the kind of development we want to see around it. So it'll be an opportunity to do all the things that the vision plan envisions, which is open space, which is mixed use, which is a new block structure, which is a new vibrancy that sets a new tone.
It's almost four blocks.
Okay. And in fact, you're talking about, and I was going to talk about this later, but you're talking about taking the library, the library which sits right next door to us here on 6th and Tryon, 6th and College, tearing that down, putting a diagonal alleyway in between 6th and Tryon and 7th and College. So you'd bisect the block, essentially, with a passageway and redeveloping Spirit Square in some way. These little alleyways, would that be called a paseo?
Sure.
Okay. You're planning to do this all over these newly developed areas to give more walking space, more...
Yes.
And different
signature infrastructure so that you feel like you're in a connected place that there's some common elements that connect it throughout.
One of the things that urban designers notice when they come to Charlotte is that the uptown blocks are comparatively large compared to a lot of other cities. And a lot of cities have alleys, and uptown has very few alleys left.
So alleys scare people, don't they? There's an alley right here between the
Does Brevard Court scare you?
Brevard Court, I don't
and
know.
And Latta Arcade?
No.
Well, that's an alley.
Okay. But it's so you're talking about
development.
Yes, it's highly programmed. It's developed. It's lit. It's
right.
It's got things to see.
It's got retail. It's a quality place that allows for a more human scale.
That's Michael Smith, who is president and CEO of Charlotte Center City Partners. He's here with Mary Newsom from UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute and Ed McKinney, the interim planning director for the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Planning Department. We're taking a break. We're coming back with more Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Ballet's Little Mermaid, featuring the underwater world created by Hans Christian Andersen and brought to life by new sets and costumes, March 11th to the 20th at Knight Theater. Tickets and information at charlotteballet.org. On this week's edition of Charlotte's Local News Roundup, we get reaction to Super Tuesday contests and what they mean for North Carolina's upcoming primary, an update on congressional redistricting in the state, and on the new sales taxes on services that went into effect this week, protests surrounding Margaret Spelling's first week as UNC system president, and more. That's all tomorrow on this program. program at 9 o'clock. North Carolina's primary, as I said, is coming up in just a week and a half, and you're invited to a special live show examining the state's role in the presidential election. It'll be at McGlowan Theater on Monday, March 14th at 9 a.m., and you can get details at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, for the first time in years, a major abortion case is before the Supreme Court. At issue is whether a new Texas law restricts women's right to abortion, what the outcome could mean for access to legal abortion nationwide.
That's the topic of the Diane Rehm Show, ahead from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, on listener-funded public radio, we're 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking with Ed McKinney from the Planning Department at Charlotte-Mecklenburg, Michael Smith from Charlotte Center City Partners, and Mary Newsom with the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute about the multiple plans that make up the overarching plan for the North End. There's no easy way to say this. Is there an easy way to explain this in one word or one phrase?
It's the area between Uptown and UNC Charlotte.
Okay.
And how do we make sure that it meets its potential in providing a fabric for what tomorrow is for Charlotte?
And there are multiple pieces to this, and we ended up in the last segment talking about where we're sitting now, which is Spirit Square is actually part of this plan because you're talking about taking this building down except for the theaters, which are historic and will be saved, and turning this whole block, which includes the library, into something else. Now, many people would look at that and say, you're going to tear down the library? That was built yesterday. Why are we tearing down the library? Why don't you just reuse it, repurpose it? What will happen to the library in this plan?
Well,
because people love the library.
The decision about the public library will be made by Mecklenburg County and the library board. So they are a part of the visioning process. Mm-hmm. But in the end, they're going to govern themselves. They're going to make their own decision about what to do with that. But they are in a process right now of evaluating the main public library of the 21st century, and how can it best serve, and what is being done in that library today that doesn't need to be done there, and what could be done there. It's incredible infrastructure for civic life.
When was that library built? 1980-something?
I think it was the 80s. Yeah. There was another building on the site, and maybe they used some of the foundations. I just can't remember.
When was it that we decided to not put doors at the front of buildings? That would help us
70s,
determine.
70s and 80s. It was 70s and 80s.
Because a lot of people would look at that and say, here Charlotte goes again. They tear down everything that's not 5 minutes old or 5 minutes new. That building can't be repurposed. It should come down. But if it stayed up, would it spoil the plan?
No. There's ways to do this plan with that library as it's built.
All right. So there are a lot of surface lots in this part of Uptown and a lot of older buildings that have seen better days, I suppose. And that's what you want to take out and redo and use that as an opportunity to revision, if that's a word, what the streetscape will be like, what the experience of being in that area will be like. Who has to buy into that to make that happen?
Everybody, essentially, all the way from the public side, because there's public infrastructure that we potentially will have to be invested in to make that work, all the way down to the developers who, you know, will need to make the kinds of commitments that we want to see in terms of the mix of use, the level of attention they play to the street and to the activation. So it requires, which is why the process was designed in a way that really brought in all of those stakeholders so that we could get a common vision and a clear aspiration for what we want it to be.
We do a lot of shows on growth and development and urban development and things like that, and we've had several major architects and planners on this program talking exactly about what you're talking about right now. Making a streetscape that is human in its scope and not designed for necessarily for cars, but for pedestrians, with mid-rise buildings of various different heights, live-work-play environments, something on the street level for people to see that they feel part of, giving you an environment that is more, well, you know, that's why people like Disney World. They like Main Street on Disney World because they're part of it. This is a new thing for Charlotte, it seems to me.
It is, and it's, you know, the challenge is taking the Disney World concept but putting it in a real world
right.
context. So we've got real functionality that has to happen. You've got to get service and access to these developments, but you also have to do it in a way that's pedestrian friendly.
And when these guys came and talked about this, they talked about other cities. And I believe Vancouver was one of them that they talked about that incorporates this kind of development. Is there anything in Charlotte that people could go to right now so they would understand what you're talking about in your vision for North Tryon? Any place in Charlotte?
Well, I mean, I think we should take credit for the things we've done in Uptown. I mean, Tryon Street itself is a great example of a vision that was cast, you know, decades ago, and we have implemented that. And it's tying together the public infrastructure of that sidewalk with the commitments to development.
Celebrated as one of the greatest main streets in America.
Tryon Street?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. You do walk score. There are parts of Tryon Street that are like 95 points on walk score.
I have learned something on this program today.
It's a beautiful street.
But well, I didn't say it wasn't. I'm just
another part of Uptown that follows a lot of these principles. It's a different concept. Is the area around Johnson and Wales, which is sort of five stories, a lot of apartments, retail on the ground floor. The parking decks are all hidden inside the apartment buildings. I think that was David Furman who did that. And that was all according to a plan that the city planning department did in, I guess, the 80s or the 90s. I can't remember.
So this, it seems to me, will require zoning changes. And this is where Ed comes in here, I think, in a big way. The planning department is working on completing new zoning ordinances that are said to entirely reconstruct the existing code. How much of that is because of the need to do this in North End, or how much of it is simply because our codes, I think, are 75 years old and need to be updated?
Well, it's both. In what's clear in places like Uptown and places like South End, and essentially all the stations that we're planning with the infrastructure that we're putting in, is we need the right regulatory tools to build the community we want. We talk a lot about, and we've talked a lot about this morning, about the retail, commercial, or just activation of the street. That needs to happen in some of our key places, Uptown and our station areas being one of them. We need to make sure that our ordinances and our regulations make that happen in a way that has to be real with how we finance development, how development really occurs. But we do have a great opportunity to strengthen those tools in our ordinance.
And you're talking about doing something that you refer to as a hybrid. What does that mean?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion and a lot of thought about zoning ordinances and their the way they regulate. And form-based is a term people use to talk about how we design the tools around the place we're trying to build, the physical place, rather than the uses and the technical details. And so when we talk about hybrid, is we believe our ordinance needs to include those kinds of tools, but also realize that there's other places in our city, which is a pretty vast geography, that don't need that level of regulation. And so for us, that means a hybrid. So it means we probably have a much stronger, quote-unquote, form-based approach to places that are like Uptown and in our station areas, but our ordinance will have to kind of deal with a variety of places.
So right now, could you, with the ordinances in place, could you do what you wanted to do in this area, for instance, or even further up the corridor, or do these ordinances have to change in order for you to accomplish
it? Well, so the trick is you could do it, but what our challenge is we probably need a little bit of stronger tools in our ordinance to require it. So, so there's nothing stopping currently developers to do the things that we want them to do, but we need to be clear about where we want them to do those things and get a little bit stronger about what our vision requires and what we want them to do.
And here's an example of how that plays out up near UNC Charlotte. You've got station areas planned. They're kind of in the process of being built. A lot of the zoning that now exists on the dirt was put there in the 80s. And if you own the property, you could just go out and build a Walmart. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but you could just go out and build a Walmart. You wouldn't need a rezoning. And that's very different from the type of development you want next to your station area. So I think the idea is you figure out how do you have a zoning that would allow you to do retail but that is more walkable, that's the kind of development you want near a transit area.
Michael.
In the life of a city, there are points in its growth curve where you have to raise the bar on standards because the minimums become the standards a lot of times because it's easier to bank. It's easier to get drawn. It's easier to set your ROI and to have the project pencil. And, you know, what's required in D.C. and in Boston and Chicago and in San Francisco, some of the greatest cities in the world, it wasn't always to the standard where it is today. It's over time making sure that your standards match what can clear the market. And we're at a point where we can ask for more.
And builders and developers will build to the minimum required standard in most cases. So if you want them to build better buildings, you have to raise the standards.
And what we've seen, yes. And we brought some development experts in from Southern California and from the D.C. area to look at the South End. They said, you've captured lightning in a bottle here. We said, great, come to town. They said, no way, because what you have here is a code that I don't have any assurance for what's going to be built next to me, and that's too big a risk. So they could build to this standard because they know what the market would support.
Mm-hmm.
But if your neighbor builds this, it erodes the asset you just created.
My next question was going to be, when you raise these standards and when you put this plan into place, are developers going to be on board with this? Will they want to meet those standards? Or would it just be easier for them to say, you know, we'll build someplace else. We'll build in another city. We'll build, because it's happened. Developers, as you said, have come to South End, looked at it and said, great, but not for us. So how do you attract developers into this new way of thinking?
Well, that's the part of that for us is the process that we go through to redevelop this ordinance. So it's going to require a lot of dialogue and a lot of mutual understanding about the constraints they have and the kind of goals that we have, and making sure that we find a way that meets both goals. I think the reality of the investment that we've made in these places, particularly on the North Corridor, and the nature of Charlotte as being a place that is growing and is attracting development, I think it is a time to be clearer about the expectations and the aspirations we have, and I think developers are ready to meet it.
So you're working on these proposed ordinances right now. With whom are you working? Is this the planning department working in a vacuum? Are you working with outsiders, with developers, with architects, with Charlotte Center City Partners, with the Chamber of Commerce? Who are you working with?
All of the above. That process is just starting to get off the ground. We've been having deeper discussions with our city council and our planning commission to set the stage for what that public process should be, who should be involved, setting kind of a set of milestones about that process. We'll be laying that out over the next couple of months. But it will touch everyone, and we will have a process that allows everyone to have input and dialogue about it.
And how many years away do you think we are from realizing a final version of this plan, which has to then go to Charlotte City Council, and maybe the County Commission, I don't know, for approval? How far away are we from that, and how big a political battle will that be?
It'll have its own challenges, but it's a process that we believe can be designed to get us to a draft of what we think that ordinance should be within a year and a half. The process of actually adopting that takes a longer set of steps to go through council and the public and the planning commission. But we understand the urgency. We know that there's development going on now that we need to make sure have these higher standards. But as you described, the kind of public process that requires does take time, and the kind of technical work and thinking to redo an ordinance that's, you know, at least 50 years old and, you know, 3 or 4 inches thick is not a simple process either. So those two things combined require a certain level of engagement.
To your question, too, about will the developers continue to invest here, it has to be a conversation. But ULI just published what are the three hottest real estate markets today in the U.S., Dallas, Austin, Charlotte. Mm. We've got 62 active projects in Uptown and South End. We have 20 projects that were either recently completed or are active in the North End. We've got 9 cranes up. I mean, the wind's at our back now.
Is North End, the geography, the landmass, bigger than South End? What you're talking about wanting to develop over time?
It's probably similar in size.
Really? Because how far south does South End go? To Woodlawn?
No, South End's terminus right now.
East Boulevard, West Boulevard?
It's a hot brand. So people are constantly adding Lower right. South End, Loso. So it ends at that remount at the right. light rail vehicle maintenance.
So let us get beyond Uptown and let's move further north, because you have plans for North Tryon, north of the Brookshire Freeway. That area right now looks not unlike what South Boulevard looked like in the 1970s and 80s, I suppose. What would transformation of that area look like? What do you want it to be like? What are you hoping it will be like? Mary?
Are we talking the quote-unquote North End now?
Sure. Yeah, the North End, Tryon Street.
It's interesting because I think that the buildings there, it doesn't have the abandoned buildings. Or not abandoned. It doesn't have the vacancies, I don't think, that South End did in the 1980s. So I think it's going to be trickier in that way. I think there are more opportunities to repurpose some of the old buildings. Is it Noda Brewing that's taken over that big
yes.
that big building at the corner of Otando and North Tryon? I mean, I think some of that's going to start happening. The fun part and the tricky part is going to be, how do you integrate housing into that area in a way that is walkable and that is attractive to pedestrians?
It's going to have to be multifamily, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's okay. But there's a lot of there's some single-family home neighborhoods nearby, Optimus Park, which is on the other side of that gigantic rail yard. And the neighborhood, is it Lockwood and Tryon Hills? There's a variety of smaller neighborhoods back in there, which I think are going to be seeing gentrification. I may be wrong, but people are going to say rail line, neighborhood, house, let me buy it.
And this is part of the 2020 plan, and 2020 refers to the year. That's 4 years away. Is any of this going to be done in 2020?
The 2020 plan was not intended to be a let's complete this in the next 10 years.
Okay.
Those are 20, 30, 50-year plans that every 10 years we refresh.
Okay. Meanwhile, along the northern expansion of the Lynx Blue Line, which is going to go from 7th Street, a block from where we are right now, through Noda, up to the university, this area today is characterized by older, lower-income neighborhoods and industrial buildings. Is the plan to make use of those things, to preserve those things, or to replace them with something entirely new?
I don't think plans typically pinpoint a building and say, let's preserve this building, let's not preserve that building.
Well, what fits in with the plan? For what is the plan for that area? We've talked about a fairly concrete vision for Uptown along the north side. What do you see along the rail line that goes from 7th Street out through Noda and up to the university?
It'll be actually a very interesting mix, different than the South Corridor. And we've just actually completed last year the station area and vision plans for the stations in University City, mm-hmm. which are a totally different kind of animal than any other stations that we've had to deal with. As Mary sort of alluded to, that's a place that was really designed in the 70s and 80s around suburban, commercial, auto-oriented development. And now what we're faced with is a challenge of how to rebuild that infrastructure in a way that's more walkable, that connects to the station. So the opportunity there is, we have several stations that have large greenfield sites that can completely transform and we can completely control in a walkable urban way. And then we also have places like shopping centers that will redevelop over time.
We're going to get to the university area because that's really your bailiwick, Mary Newsom. But before we do that, I don't want to avoid Noda. We kind of tap dancing around Noda and all those neighborhoods around Noda that go from here to there. And gentrification is on people's minds. So let's talk about that when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members in Robinson Bradshaw, committed to providing collaborative legal solutions to the business community. Offices in Charlotte, Rock Hill, and the Research Triangle, RobinsonBradshaw.com. For the first time in years, a major abortion case is before the Supreme Court. At issue is whether a new Texas law restricts women's access to abortion. So what the outcome could mean for abortion rights nationwide will be the topic of the conversation coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can reach us through email at charlottetalks@wfae.org. You can search for WFAE on Facebook or use Charlotte Talks on Twitter, and we're coming right back.
Healthcare providers want to learn how to spot victims of human trafficking. It's hard, though, because those people are trapped.
Just 100% control. Someone literally owning you, running your life, every single inch of your life.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. What it's like to be the human in human trafficking. That's next time on Marketplace.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Ed McKinney, Interim Planning Director of Charlotte Mecklenburg Planning Department, Mary Newsom, Associate Director of UNC Charlotte's Charlotte Urban Institute, and Michael Smith, President and CEO of Charlotte Center City Partners. We have several emails about this. South End has been great for developers, but how are the less fortunate going to benefit from growth? And another Twitter comment, revitalization is synonymous with gentrification. How do you plan on fairly compensating the folks that you push out? Gentrification is a concern, particularly as this light rail moves north through Noda and Belmont and Optimist Park and Villa Heights and places like that. So it's going to change the character of these long-time neighborhoods, many of which are lower-income neighborhoods. What's the plan? Is the plan to get – are they going to be forced out, even if there's not a plan to force them out, simply because developers are going to see this as a gold mine and start buying everything in sight? What's going to happen?
I think these are big opportunities for neighborhoods that have had disinvestment to receive new investment, which brings with it services and amenities that are needed.
But Cherry is experiencing new investment, and the result of that is a lot of $500,000 to higher homes coming in and people moving out because they can't afford those homes, and they got offered money for their property, and off they go. But where they go is another question because affordable housing is in short supply.
Mike, we don't have the tools to be as thoughtful and intentional about the way we manage new investment into neighborhoods. Period.
Why not? We got all these plans for making money and for making this a spectacular place, and it is a spectacular place. And we do want to make North Tryon equal to what South End is, no question about it. But then if these are plans, why can't we plan for the other side of the equation? People are going to be hurt by this.
We have, and I would say there are lessons learned, and Cherry is an example. What I would say is the stationary plans, for example, for the stations in Optimist Park and Villa Heights and Noda and going up, again, are plans that were recently adopted in the last couple of years and have done and been very mindful to draw some key lines about where we want investment and development and where the line is to protect for the character and scale and intensity of the existing neighborhood. So we have been very careful in those plans to make sure that those lines are really clear. And an example is that there's a fair amount of industrial development, existing industrial around those stations that we believe can be done and redeveloped in a way that integrates to the surrounding single family.
During urban renewal in the 60s in this city and probably into the 70s, people were being very careful and they had all these great plans. And we watched Brooklyn, the neighborhood which is now Second Ward, completely disappear off the face of the earth. There's not a trace of it left, except, up until they built that apartment building at McDowell Street and Stonewall, there was a set of stairs that went to no place. Are we being that careful again?
Or more careful? I think the plan of urban renewal was to demolish the neighborhood. That was the plan.
So this is different.
And this whole topic of, I prefer to call it displacement because I think gentrification is a word that people use and everybody uses it and means something slightly different. But the problem of displacement of poor people, most cities in America that are growing are grappling with this. There are a few tools. One is something called a land trust where a nonprofit buys the land and then figures out ways to keep some of the housing affordable over a period of time. In order to do that, you really have to get ahead of the hot land market because you can't afford to buy the land that the developer wants to put a 30-story skyscraper on.
This has already reared its ugly head in the North Tryon Street corridor beyond the 277 cutoff, where there have been calls to move the homeless shelter and urban ministry center and things like that. And Charlotte Center City Partners is not in favor of doing that.
Correct.
What's your plan? What's your suggestion?
Well, those are vital nonprofits that are part of a network of care for those that are most fragile, those that are in transition. We've got an initiative underway, which is Housing First, Charlotte-Mecklenburg. Mm-hmm. That's the right way to do it. We've got to get people sheltered first and then bring them the care and the services and support that they need to move them along that continuum back to independence. And what we need to do is study what is the impact of having these services provided in a neighborhood that's a vital part of tomorrow for Charlotte. So how do we make sure that any code violations are addressed? How do we address crime in the neighborhood, which is not necessarily the homeless people? A lot of times it is on the homeless people. And how do we improve the infrastructure, the lighting, the sidewalks, the public realm through that area to be able to kind of work our way through?
And is that what you there goes the fire department. Is that what you mean by creating more balance?
Yes, because there is an imbalance right now where it is – there's the majority of the people that are there are folks kind of coming and going between shelter and services.
But if there are people who object to the presence of all these homeless people and lower-income people looking for services at these two locations on North Tryon, how do you encourage development if you're also going to keep them in place in the interim?
I think demand takes care of that. That we're making infrastructure investments that make this a highly attractive area and part of a corridor that connects Uptown and UNC Charlotte.
The light rail is also going to change the university, it would seem to me, substantially.
Yes.
Are you ready? What does the university see as what's going to happen to them the day that station opens on the campus?
Well, let me just make clear, the university really is welcoming this light rail. They've put in something like $5 million worth of land and infrastructure to welcome it. There's a campus-wide committee that's grappling with all of the different issues that they have to think about. Parking, who's going to park? Just parking alone is a monster. That whole area has got a real parking issue because of all of the students and faculty and staff who drive in. It's not a walkable area to start with. So the cats currently, if you park in one of the lots by the South Corridor rail line, it's free. So if you plop a parking deck right next to a major university that charges $450 a year for a student to get a parking permit, and you have all those parking spaces free, what happens? So they're trying to figure out, and I think the last I heard was that they were, if you have a transit ticket, you can get out of the parking deck, and if you don't, you can't. So they're grappling with that. They're grappling with the on-campus transportation. The station is kind of at one corner of the campus. I happen to work at the opposite corner of the campus, so it would be a 15 or 20-minute walk for me to walk to the station. How do they rearrange their campus shuttle system? Mm-hmm. They've got, you know, how do they make it attractive to students and faculty to use transit so the university does not have to keep building parking deck after parking deck after parking deck? So they're looking at all of this stuff.
How many students live on campus?
I don't know the answer. I will say 5,000 to 6,000, and I might well be very wrong.
So, do you see this from Charlotte Center City Partners? Let's reverse the line here. They're going to come into town. How do you see this impacting Uptown?
The idea of connecting the two campuses of the university, its Uptown campus and its University City campus, is a windfall for the city. Just the accessibility of having almost 20 miles of connectivity to human capital, being able to get them to the university's campuses is great. But having the accessibility in both directions, having faculty and staff being able to live in South End, in Uptown, in the North End, it's going to be extraordinary. And I think students are going to see UNC Charlotte in a different light because of its better connectivity to our urban center.
How many miles is this from 7th Street to the university?
9.3.
Okay, so that's a lot of a possible development. Are we going to see the same kind of development along that corridor that we have seen in South End, or will it be different? Because there's been a lot of complaints about the sameness of the development in South End and other places around town where apartment buildings are cropping up. They all look the same, and they're all designed exactly the same. So the worry, of course, is in 10 years when something new comes along, who would want to live there?
I think it's going to be different, but I think it's going to be different in a different way than what you're describing. The south line, you got South End is hot, and the farther south you get, it gets less and less hot. And then you get to Pineville. And what's at the end of the line is a large parking deck and a couple of power centers and the small town, charming town of Pineville. What's at the end of this line is a campus that has a combined total of about 31,000 faculty and students. If you they're talking about going, they've got 27,000 students now, and you add 4,000 to 5,000 staff. That's the size of Mooresville.
Right.
You've got essentially a town.
Right.
At the end of the line. So I think the development is going to start inching both directions. And I think it's going to look different out near the university. The existing stuff there is newer. People are going to be less willing to tear stuff down if it's new. But there's also
we're tearing down the library.
I know. There's stuff that's being built right now. Little bitty auto only buildings. They're not going to tear that down for another 20 years.
But I understand in that area there have only been a handful of transit oriented rezonings, and those are mostly for CATS parking decks. What that says to me is that there appears to be a gravitation towards staying suburban and not becoming more urban. Would that be accurate, or is that just my inaccurate assessment?
I'm going to let Ed talk more about that, but there's some big empty spaces out there as well. And what happens to those big empty spaces is going to make a major impact.
Yeah, there is definitely a suburban tension there now. And as Mary's described, this is different than the South Corridor. We have an employment concentration and a university concentration that is a huge opportunity. And then the challenge is, how do we take that suburban employment concentration and make it urban and really invest it around the stations?
Does that area want to become more urban? I mean, there's a Charlotte Center City Partners has a counterpart,
yes.
University City Partners, which does exactly what you do.
Darlene Heater.
And yes, Darlene Heater used to work for Charlotte Center City Partners. She's running that organization. Are they as involved up there as you are down here toward what's happening in their neck of the woods?
Absolutely.
Do they want this to become more – is there a thrust to make it more urban, at least along the line?
The world is pivoting towards urbanization. So sometimes it's in CBDs like Uptown, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's
CBD in means
Central Business Districts, sorry. And then there's areas like University City. It's a big opportunity for them to become – more forward, more towards the kind of jobs, the kind of places where people want to live.
Because they have long said that people forget about them. They don't realize what University City really is, and they've been trying to brand that area for years as University City because it is a city, and it has a lot of things going on that people don't even think about. They don't even know because they don't leave Center City or the south side of Charlotte. This will help?
Investments in transit cause this three-dimensional change in a place where you have an existing place of housing, jobs, university, and you put this infrastructure in place, and it changes the way developers and banks and everyone think about what could be.
We've had some architects and developers on this program talk about the sameness that we're seeing around town as we become more urban and more projects go up to feed that appetite. Have we learned from what many consider our mistakes, and are we going to change things as we move north? Or are we going to keep repeating the sameness?
No, so we're not going to keep repeating it. I think the opportunity, again, is to take advantage of the investment that's already being made and the concentration of employment to really create a new option. The option for the University City is you've got they're able to then bring in prospects that want to be in University City, but give them an option that's either urban or more suburban. And that comes with a quality of development that will be different. And again, back to our area plans, our station plans, and ultimately our regulatory tools, we're looking to make those tools stronger in a way that creates that vibrancy and that diversity.
Bill emails an interesting question. Is infrastructure being updated to keep up with all of this growth?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things I wanted to emphasize is it's not just about the light rail system. We have a long plan of putting in other infrastructure. University City is a good example of streetscape investments so that we can make sure that people can actually walk to the stations. A good example at the J.W. Clay station near the university is investment the county is making in the Barton Creek Greenway that will connect the existing Mallard Creek Greenway to J.W. Clay, which is literally a block from the station. So now you've got the breadth of the miles of county greenway where somebody living in University City can walk or bike to that station. And so we're making sure all of those infrastructure pieces are aligned and coordinated.
Callan on Twitter writes, as UNC Charlotte grows and the light rail opens, how will we deal with congestion? And the panel is stumped.
I think no city, quote unquote, deals with congestion if that means your streets are still empty. Famous architect Andres Duany says congestion is the condition of the city.
Scott on Twitter, can this panel speak very quickly to any plans for potential reuse of 40-acre former Norfolk Southern intermodal rail yard in the NoDa area? Any plans for that? Is it not used?
I think there's a combination of users, cats being one of them. So there's some opportunity for development, but there's some other infrastructure that cats is using some of that land for.
It's privately owned by Norfolk Southern.
And it does present a problem to this plan, doesn't it? We talked about it off the air, the fact that you have to figure a way to bridge the gap either side of that rail yard.
Belmont Optimus Park is a great neighborhood. The North End is a great neighborhood, and their connectivity is interrupted by the rail yard.
When do we start seeing some of this happening, coming out of the ground? Does it depend more on the light rail than it is on anything else at the moment?
It already is.
Yeah, you're seeing it now.
First Ward Park, that's part of it?
Absolutely. Well, we're moving with here on North Tryon. The North End is already moving as well. There's 20 projects that are underway. There's lots of assemblage that's already been done.
As we say, stay tuned. Michael Smith, CEO and President of Charlotte Center City Partners, Mary Newsom, Associate Director of UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute, and Ed McKinney, Interim Planning Director of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Planning Department. Thank you all for the hour.